Come on aboard, I promise you. There's lots of room for you on the bandwagon.
Hey there, welcome into another episode of The Bandwagon. After a brief hiatus for summer vacations and such, we are back for more sports discussion. I'm Brian Moldane.
I'm Lisa Braltz.
John. I love the way you introduce yourself, John.
I do. It's different every time, but kind of the same.
Yeah, similar themes, yeah. Variations.
Theme it's the best variation. Description like everyone has made about me. He's different all the time, but really just the same.
I need to like be like Lisa Braltz some next time.
Brian Moldy.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we can each
see
have
how
our sort of like,
it is?
Like you know when they say D for three or whatever. You know. Anyway, sorry.
So yeah, we'll have a lot of great discussion today. We'll start off kind of updating everyone on our featured Olympic events that we discussed last time on the bandwagon a few weeks back. We've got another edition of Better Tate Than Never coming up. Travis Tate will join us to talk about the Olympics and marketing. We'll also have an Olympic-flavored rivalry. John Steinbacher will bring that to us here in a bit. And social media nonsense, as always, to close things out. Let's kind of start with an update on our kind of chosen Olympic events here. For me, it was the 3,000-meter steeplechase. The women's final was Monday of this week, and for the first time ever, an American won a medal. Emma Coburn claimed the bronze medal, set a new American record in the process. 9:07.63 was her time. She finished behind Ruth Jebet of Bahrain and Hyvin Jepkemwa of Kenya. And I have no idea if I said that correctly.
It's pretty good.
But it was the first medal ever for a woman, American woman in the 3,000-meter steeplechase. Always a fun event to watch. And the men's final is coming up. It might even be – we're recording on Tuesday. It is tomorrow. It is Wednesday is the final for that. Evan Jaeger of the United States is a medal possibility for the United States in that event.
So I just have to interject here and discuss the text message you sent us when the steeplechase was on. I think it was an earlier heat. It wasn't like the
final.
Yeah,
it was preliminaries.
Brian writes in all caps, women's steeplechase right now, you guys. So then I'm like, is it on NBC or is it streaming? Because, you know, we're watching it so many different ways. And John chimes in and says, some guys at Boston Airport Bar are asking why they keep running through the puddles. So that should let you know, like, how front of mind steeplechases in the American sports-averse.
Yeah, and for those who didn't hear our last discussion, what makes the steeplechase so fun for me is two things. One, you have to be a really good distance runner to even have a chance in this thing. You know, it's 3,000 meters, so not a short race. And then you've got hurdles. And the thing about these hurdles, it's not like in the 110-meter hurdles where if you hit a hurdle, you know, the hurdle goes over. These things are like anchored to the track. If you hit one of those hurdles, the hurdle's not moving.
Right.
You go down. And then you've also got, of course, the water pit, where you basically jump on top of a hurdle, spring off of it, and land in water. So, yeah, it's just nothing like it.
So so I turned on the race after I got your text, and right at this moment where one of the runners, like, totally gracelessly fell in the water. And it's deep. It's not like a little splashy puddle. It's a few inches deep and kind of crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
I enjoyed it, but it was like, whoa, man, this is serious. And I had seen it before, but I guess I didn't realize. I thought there was more variety in the race. I didn't realize it was like you run around a track and then you run these hurdles and then you jump into the water and then you do it again several times, depending on how long your race was. I don't know why I thought there was more to it than
that. Yeah, and the other interesting thing about it is it's the only track race where you're not going like completely around the oval of the track. When you get to one of the turns, you like kind of go inside.
Yes.
They like cut off the end of the track, and that's
right.
Where the water pit is.
Yeah,
is in there. So it's just a very unique event. The men's steeplechase coming up, and congratulations to Emma Coburn, first
USA.
Ever American medal. So
good job.
There is your steeplechase update.
All right, so my sport is table tennis, and we have nothing good to report for the United States in the table tennis realm, as predicted. China is very dominant, and with following them are Japan and North Korea in terms of winning any medals at all in any individual or team events. So, yeah, we can't compete. However, I do want to say that I really enjoyed watching the matches that I did watch. I had never seen a doubles match before, or not recently. So I've watched a lot of singles, and those are fun. And you don't realize how small the table is until you see like what appear to be giant hulking men, like 6 foot guys, look huge when they're playing against each other on this ping pong table. Imagine that with two guys on each side. Mm-hmm. Watching the doubles, I couldn't understand how the players did not smash into each other more often, or at all. I didn't see any accidents. And some of the little rituals and habits of players, like in terms of how they hold, when they're serving, they hold the ball very close to their face, and the paddle is also very close to their face. And it was incredible, but it is clearly dominated by China. Very good players, pretty intense. But if you want to watch the dance of athletic dance that happens in table tennis, I think the medal. There's matches on this morning, so it's obviously after the fact, but plenty of replays to be watched to see this dance that is international table tennis.
Wunderbar. All right, John Steinbacher, we demand a trampoline update.
Yeah.
The U.S. never had any chance, really, in this event. So.
Man.
But some big surprises, a lot. When I watched it this time, it's very hypnotic. You hear the, like, ka-ching mm-hmm. of the thing, and then they flip, and then ka-ching, flip, ka-ching, flip. Anyway.
Sounds like a nap time.
Yeah, no, but it's, I mean, you get locked in, and it's just kind of hypnotic. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, on the women's side, Rosie McLennan from Canada. Mm. My daughter is Canadian. She's very excited about this. She repeated as the gold medalist. In fact, in 2012, she was the only Canadian to win a gold medal, so she was the flag bearer for the opening ceremony.
Hey, there you go.
So very exciting. Good job, Rosie. Mm-hmm. And then on the men's side, I had mentioned Dong Dong was the favorite. He came in second. This was a big surprise.
Upset.
Ladislaw Honchoro from Belarus pulled up the upset. I watched this, and it's just amazing that anyone can tell the difference. Basically, nobody fell. They all looked great in the air. I mean, you gotta kind of have to stay within this, like, rectangle on the trampoline.
I wanted to ask about that because I watched part of this. I don't know where we were in the, you know, if it was the final or whatever. But one of the commentators was like, all he has to do is land on the trampoline. I'm thinking, really? Like, just land on it anywhere? It's not very big.
Yeah.
You know? But I saw these marks on the trampoline, and so I wasn't sure, like, do you get more points for landing right in the middle? Do you get points taken off if you land a little more to the side? You're not going to land on your butt or fall off.
I think you're supposed to basically stay within...
Like that square, that red square.
Otherwise...
Okay.
I mean, I think it's probably mostly a safety thing, but yeah, if you step out of that, I think you probably get deducted.
So it's like Whoopi Goldberg in the center square? Is that what you're saying?
It's a lot like Whoopi Goldberg in the center square.
Exactly.
All right.
And quickly, I think we should update the other part we talked about, which was, are there going to be any disasters? Is it going to go through scot-free? And you know, there's been some incidents. I think swimmer Ryan Lochte was mm-hmm. held up just the other day.
Saw that.
Some other kind of robberies and other bad things seem to be happening, but sort of the most visual is the diving pool.
Yes, drain that pool.
Which went from clear blue to...
Green?
Green.
Green.
And lovely algae green.
Yeah, apparently smelled delightful.
The quote from a German diver I saw was, "The entire arena smells like a fart."
Nice.
Was a quote from one of the German divers.
It's not really an image, but you know what I mean.
Right. Sensory.
A sensory sort of experience there for us. Wow.
But other than the pool and the robberies, I feel like, you know, everyone's like, oh, it's so great. Rio's great. And all the facilities are great.
I have seen a few tweets from reporters down there that it seems like lines are very long to get into venues. I think Teddy Greenstein from the Chicago Tribune is down there, and I saw a tweet from him saying, yeah, don't get food on site because the lines just take forever. Mm. If you want any food, eat ahead of time. So I think, as you said, overall, especially in what we're seeing on the TV coverage, as we kind of expected, was putting Rio in a positive light and emphasizing the positive of what's happening down there with the Olympic Games. And I think overall, you know, the games seem to be going pretty smoothly, especially with some of the issues coming into the games.
Right.
I don't think we really knew what would happen for sure.
I thought attendance seemed light, like weirdly light in some sports, not just women's soccer, where I never really expect the attendance to be that high,
right,
but men's soccer. I'm sure the final, like the medal rounds, will have a lot more people. But even some of the gymnastics qualifying and apparatus finals, lots of empty seats. I mean, that was just something that stood out to me. Is it just whether it was because of where the cameras were situated or if there just wasn't that much many people there? It just seemed like not as well attended as other Olympics I've seen. But that's me. I don't know. I haven't read anything about that. Have you?
No, I haven't really seen anything about the attendance.
I'll look into it.
Very good. We'll have that for you next time. There's an Olympic update for you. And up next, better Tate than never.
Okay, we are delighted to welcome Travis Tate back to the Bandwagon Podcast. Travis has joined us in previous episodes to lend his opinion, expertise, I don't know what we'd call it.
A mix.
A mix of both on various issues at the intersection of sports and culture. So thanks for coming back, Travis.
Thank you for having me.
I also want to point out that I saw you running in the rain yesterday.
It rained a lot. It made it a lot easier to run.
Yeah. I mean,
cools
I figured it was just you were sweating and it was raining. It was kind of all the same.
It's great.
Right? Yeah. So
love
I saw
it.
But it was like a particularly heavy part of the rain. So
Yeah. Anyway,
well done.
Thanks.
All right. So we're here to talk about specifically the Olympics. I think when we emailed you and asked you to come in, we wanted you to talk about the shelf life of Olympic heroes and how we have these 2 weeks of sports stories, narratives being created as sports are happening, narratives. First, you have the narrative coming in, then you have the during, and now I want to talk about the after. I think, well, all three of us want to talk about the after. So I don't know how much Olympics you've watched or what kind of reading you've done. I have lots of questions about particular athletes during these Olympics. But do you have anything you want to start off with?
A couple of examples maybe of people who one guy has a very close tie to Illinois, and so I can maybe talk about him for a second. So
sure.
That's Justin Spring.
Yeah.
He is currently the men's gymnastics coach. He took over for Yoshi Hayasaki after Justin graduated. Justin is my age, so he graduated Illinois in 06. And he was, you know, a tremendous athlete. I think he won the Illinois Male Athlete of the Year Award, the Dyke Edelman Award. He was like maybe a 10 or 12 time All-American in gymnastics. He was national champion. He was tremendous. So he makes the U.S. Olympic squad in 08. So he would have been about 24 years old probably. And he is on the team and he competes and everything. And they win a bronze as a team, and you know they do well, and so you kind of figure, well, for any other sports athlete, you know, major guy, this is going to be, you know, kind of the beginning of a really great career, and there just isn't a whole lot going on there for gymnastics or any of these other what we call Olympic sports, like at Illinois. You know, if you play men's basketball or football, you're playing a revenue sport, and if you play anything else, basically you're playing an Olympic sport. And so the interesting thing I thought with him was that he popped up on a Proactive commercial, which is a like zit cream.
Nice.
A number of years ago, and they didn't label him as Justin Spring, male gymnast. They just labeled him as Justin S.
Justin S.
That's kind of sad, isn't it?
I thought that was kind of fit in with what we're talking about.
So question about that. So in terms of gymnastics, I think a lot of people see when you say Olympic gymnastics, they think of women.
Yeah.
Do you think that's part of it too? Like the fact that he's a guy and is somehow less marketable because, you know, Team Bronze, that's not nothing to sneeze at by any means.
Sure.
He was terrific in the Olympics, as I recall. So do you think that has something to do with it as well? Like we Americans tend to see gymnastics as a more female sport, so those athletes have more opportunity?
That seems like it becomes a topic every 4 years, which is, you know, when the commentators on NBC talk about the women gymnasts, they refer to their beauty and their grace much more so than they do with the men's gymnasts. And they're, you know, with the men, they might talk about how explosively athletic they are, which maybe both of those things are true for both of those sports. But it goes to show you kind of the, I don't know, the gender politics, I guess, of of those two sports, especially because they're both they're not like points that you or I mean, you get points, but they're not you're not scoring points.
Right.
Like a very subjective thing you do. You don't score a touchdown. You kind of perform an activity, and that is rated. So it's all very subjective.
For sure. For sure.
I read somewhere that some male gymnasts are suggesting they should do their routines without shirts.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they were going to suggest that they should do their floor routines to music, because I totally agree with that.
Well, that they should definitely do,
I just thought
it was interesting that they...
No
they're
shirts.
Trying to they think that it probably would increase ratings.
Are they going to oil attention? Themselves up like that guy?
Yeah.
Talk about a guy who's probably going to do very well for himself after the Olympics, right? He's probably got some good marketing.
He's got, let's see, what is that? The coconut oil. He's got that market settled.
Wait, who are we
he's
talking about?
The guy who...
During the opening ceremonies,
I
forget what country he was from.
I don't remember what country either.
He was well-oiled up.
We'll find. I'm taking notes right now. We're gonna. We'll find him and put him on the website.
And I'm curious too. It seems to me that Travis, we're about the same age, at least roughly. When we were growing up, it seemed that when there was an Olympic year, it seemed like there was maybe a little more lasting marketing with some of these athletes. I think of like a Mary Lou Retton, who was everywhere. It seemed for about 2 or 3 years. After the 84 Olympics, she was kind of the golden girl of that Olympic Games. Now it seems to be once we get even a few months past the Olympic Games that a lot of these athletes just kind of recede into the background again.
I think that that's true. I think that that's the way it is. Another thing that's interesting specifically about the gymnastics part and for women gymnastics, so Gabby Douglas, I mean, she won gold in the all-around 4 years ago,
right.
And then this year she's not even competing in it just because she got beat out by, you know, two other really great American gymnasts. And so I think it goes to show, again, how, you know, your shelf life in terms of an actual athlete is very, very short. Plus, you only have this one chance. So you spend all this time working and you get the one shot at it. And maybe tomorrow, if you would have done it, you would have been better. You failed, you slipped on the beam or whatever. And so... You know, kind of an interesting thing. I'd like to see what happens in the next few years is what happens to Simone Biles. She's great. She's the best gymnast by far. She's doing the most difficult routines. But, you know, she didn't win the balance beam last night. Maybe she doesn't win something else tomorrow. I think she's got the vault, or was that also
last night?
Floor. So, you know, if she kind of goes over there, that would somehow be like a massive disappointment, even though she'll probably still get silver bronze.
Which is insane, mm-hmm. I think.
Right.
And there, and like, I sort of plumbed the depths and went into the gymnastics subreddit on Reddit last night, people were just so devastated that she wasn't going to beat some record of winning 5 gold medals at the Olympics or something. I was like, come on, guys. Like, she's amazing.
The expectations for her are very, very high. And so,
well, I will say that the woman who beat her on the beam last night had one of the most interesting routines I've ever seen on the beam. It was athletic and it was
all
graceful.
Those turns.
The turns. I mean, that stuff is hard. It's beautiful and la-di-da. That is hard. It's hard to do on the ground. It's hard to do one complete turn on the ground without losing your balance. So, every time the dude commentators make a critique, I always want to be like, let's see you get up there and do that. The guys don't have to get on a balance beam. They do a lot of other things, don't get me wrong, but they don't have to get on a balance beam.
And one of those guys, I think, that's kind of in that Mary Lou Retton, stratosphere, I guess, would be Phelps.
Right, yes.
I mean, he's bigger than her. He's bigger than probably anybody ever in terms of Olympic sports. The lasting, you know, the staying power there of being in five Olympics is tremendous. And so, you know, is he going to be the guy that can turn some kind of brand into something by, you know, associating his name with it? I don't think he's done anything like that so far.
Subway's, I think, his biggest endorsement deal that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure certainly in the swimming world he's got a lot of endorsements gear and things like that.
He just doesn't seem to have that, like, sort of winning. Like, compare him to Usain Bolt, who is just... I watch him and it's just, you know, it's a performance. He understands. He does a great job. I mean, I imagine, I guess I don't really know his marketing currently, but he's got to be all over the place. Compare him to Michael Phelps, who's kind of standoffish, you know, has had some off-the-field issues that have stood out, some controversial, some sort of seemingly not as bad as they probably should be. I know that I actually saw a reporter who covered him all the time was talking about how he's standoffish, how he had to fly across the country to do an hour interview with Michael Phelps, and Michael Phelps ended it after 4 minutes just because he could. So, I mean, I think that's really interesting comparing Michael Phelps to, like, Usain Bolt or some of these other people who seem to embrace it more than he has, which, well, you know, that's just his personality.
I have just the solution for Michael Phelps. He can really do this. I think, you know, he can associate his personality with his newfound marketing plan that I'm about to give him. All right. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Dispensaries. Okay.
So
one of the things that he – and I mentioned this in this email to you guys. One of the things that he got in trouble for is, you know, his quote-unquote off-the-field problems was – something, I think he had a bong or something in a social media picture. You know, weed is becoming legalized in many states.
Booze is legal too, but driving drunk isn't, and that's what really got him in trouble.
Oh,
he got a DUI and then went to rehab, so he's probably
out of the,
might not be into the. I mean, the jokes are great, but I don't know if he'd still be down. Who knows?
I don't know. He can kind of do whatever he wants at this point.
Right. Him cleaning up, I think, was really the impetus for him to get back into the Olympics, too.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it was just this way to sort of stave off having to do the next thing, whatever that is. But I think he could probably do whatever he wants. Okay, so we've been talking a lot about sports that are, you know, every 4 years become really prominent. We all care so much about track and field or swimming or gymnastics. I want to ask you about an athlete who is really well known for their time professionally and in their sports, other big tournaments. But I think the Olympics might be a turning point for this person, and that person is Hope Solo, given what happened in the Olympics, both athletically. Brian and I were talking earlier about how, you know, her performance in this Olympics was not what it usually is or often is, with her being one of the best goalkeepers in the world. So what happens to her now? I think marketing her post-Olympics, first of all, the U.S. women's national team lost their game to Sweden, so they were out of the tournament. So there's no, like, gold medal tour or anything like that. But what happens to her after this? It's kind of a double whammy. They lost, and then she said a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
Man, there's just not a whole lot of options there. I mean, how old is she? Is she going to be back at the next Olympics?
31 or 2?
Early 30s, I think.
Yeah.
So she can, I mean, I would imagine as a goalie, she can probably stay on longer than opposed to a midfielder or something or a striker.
She's 35.
Oh, she's okay.
Okay.
So, but like, is it why, from a PR standpoint and from a morale standpoint, and I haven't really heard anybody from the team talk about this yet or the coach, no one said anything. Do you keep her? Do you call her up again? Is she sort of like box office poison?
And they kind of already had this problem when she had her.
She has had a lot of situations, shall we say?
Yeah,
lots, and lots.
Here she is.
Some I hadn't even heard about until after this, and
I
was
think
sort
the
of
biggest
reading
one is domestic violence.
Yes,
right.
Yeah. Which and then.
So she's had all those problems. Yet here she is. She's at 35 years old, and she made it, you know, to the team this year. Obviously, she didn't play well, and they didn't win gold. So those are problems. But if she, you know, plays well in games, that's eventually all they're going to care about, I think. I mean, that I kind of view, you know, any of the Olympic teams the same as I view any NFL team or NBA team. If the guy, you know, or woman has enough talent, that's going to overshadow kind of any problems that they've got, quote unquote, off the field. That stuff doesn't even get talked about anyway on NBC.
Right. That's true. More definitely food for thought. Like some people have said she's been given so many chances because she's female. Some people say that she has more scrutiny on her personal and private life because she's female. I mean, I think there are a lot of different ways to come at it. But I feel like this Olympics, from a PR standpoint, from people wanting to work with her or be associated with her, I feel like even – I mean, part of it is the team didn't win the gold medal. They're out of contention. But part of it, too, is just like – does she – I mean, I'm not even sure she has any endorsements now. I don't think people want to work with her anyway, and this just sort of seals the deal, it seems mm-hmm. like.
Yeah, yeah, I would think so. Before we let you go, Travis, I'm curious, just you know, we've talked about some of the bigger names here. I'm curious if you've been watching here the last week plus, any personalities that have really jumped out at you? We mentioned Usain Bolt, just a very charismatic guy, just enjoying himself while he sets world records and wins gold medals. Any other personalities have really jumped out at you from this Olympic Games?
Less of it's hard to get to know all these people, and I haven't seen as many of these like sappy NBC stories on like the sad story behind their life or whatever. But I think the interesting one, the one that I wrote down here in my notes, is Anthony Irvin, who's yet another swimmer. Mm-hmm. We keep talking about these swimmers and gymnasts. They kind of take over. But so he won gold in 2000. Not 2004, not 2008, not 2012, 2000. So forever ago, essentially. And then he goes out like 2 days ago and he won the 50-meter freestyle, which has just got to be like the – what do you call those short cars that just all they do is the
yeah, it's the 100-meter dash of swimming,
right.
Basically.
Yeah. It's just an explosion of water when everybody goes in there and they're just trying to hit the wall as soon as they possibly can. And I thought it was just amazing that he could be gone for that long and come out and win at that age. Even if he was around the last 10 years, I mean, it would be amazing for him to do that as like a 35-year-old. But the interesting thing that I found was a story about how he didn't really have any money to pay for himself to get to Rio. And so he got hooked up with a woman, I believe her name is Emily White. And Emily started Dream Fuel, which is like essentially the athletic version of Kickstarter. And so he essentially did this Kickstarter like promotion on this website and got enough money to go to Rio. And I just thought that was an interesting thing. I mean, there isn't like we've been talking about, there isn't a whole lot of money afterward, but there isn't a whole lot of money beforehand either.
That's true.
So you got to actually get to Rio. You got to do your training and everything. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting guy.
Yeah, very good. All right.
Cool.
Travis Tate joining us for Better Tate Than Never.
Thanks,
always fun, Travis.
T-Dog.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, it's rivalry time. John Steinbacher, you are up, and it's time for a little Olympic blast from the past.
That's right. I was struggling with this, and I have to give you credit, Mr. Moline. You suggested this rivalry. I looked into it, and then suddenly, I think yesterday, there were actually a couple articles on the internet about it after you had talked to me, although it seems like more than a coincidence. Anyway,
it's a coincidence, John. Purely coincidence.
So we're going to go back. We're going to go back to 1984, which a lot of people remember as the L.A. Olympics, of course. It was a big deal. The U.S. won a lot, thanks in part to those Russians skipping.
I guess the boycott.
The Soviets at that
point. Soviet Union.
Soviet Union skipped the Olympics. Mary Lou Retton, we talked about her, breakout star. Carl Lewis. Coming into the Olympics, one athlete that was expected to have a huge breakout was Mary Decker. She was a distance runner. She'd been pretty much established as the best distance runner for women in the world at the 3,000-meter level, which now they've moved it to 5,000 meters. Back then, they thought, oh, women can't run as far as men, or I don't know what
yeah,
they thought.
Foolishness.
Anyway, she had been that way for a while. She didn't get to compete in the 1980 Olympics, which were in Moscow, because of the U.S. didn't go to that one. So this was going to be her moment. Her entire career had been building up to winning the gold in front of the home crowd in L.A. There wasn't too you know, there weren't anyone who seemed like very good competitors. At the last minute, this 18-year-old young woman from South Africa got access to the Olympics, which was interesting because South Africans were not allowed to compete at the Olympics at that time because of apartheid. But some British newspaper for publicity found out that her grandfather was English and got her a English passport so she could compete for Great Britain. Nobody knew what to expect from her. Her name was Zola Budd. Nobody knew coming in what to expect from her. She'd actually broken, I guess, Mary Decker's record in maybe the 5K or something like that. I forget. So she had a lot of potential. She ran barefoot. Which is kind of cool. Anyway, somewhere around the 1,600-meter mark of the 3,000-meter race, Zola Budd and Mary Decker running neck and neck. Mary Decker apparently likes to get a lead. She was out in front. Zola Budd right behind her. So a little something happens.
Feet tangled up.
Feet tangled up, maybe. Maybe somebody, you know, gets a little too close. Next thing you know, Mary Decker on the infield in total despair. Looks like she injured herself. Zola Budd running on ahead. She actually was ahead at that point, but you could tell it kind of startled her. She ended up in seventh place. But there's actually some really good pictures. If people aren't familiar with this, we'll post some of these pictures. But there's some great pictures of Mary Decker on the infield screaming and crying.
As soon as you posted it in our little closed loop messaging, I was like brought back to that immediately.
So the whole crowd from that point on in the race was booing Zola Budd. There's the pictures of Mary Decker. She's in total agony. I don't know how hurt she was, but obviously emotionally, just whatever. Right after the race, Zola Budd, who finished in seventh and then later said she purposely didn't want a medal because everyone was booing and it was just too emotional. She was 18. Tried to apologize. Mary Decker said, "Don't bother." She ended up crying through her post-conference, the post-game
press conference.
And then she went from, Brian, you said this yesterday, and it's all over the place. She went from being America's sweetheart to America's crybaby. So there's a whole lot to unpack here. It's just very interesting, sort of the dichotomy. This Zola Budd apparently came from a sort of somewhat remote part of South Africa, didn't really know the whole deal about, which is, you know, an indictment of itself that she was really not aware of apartheid or that whole thing. Seems like she was pretty innocent coming over here, just coming to run a race. They got tangled up. I mean, you got to feel for Mary Decker. Her entire career had been building up to this point. I guess, you know, the next year, 1985, was the best of her career, but then she never won an Olympic medal. I'm not sure if Zola Budd did. They both had running careers after that, and apparently not until very recently have they gotten back together, and sort of now they've got, there's been a few documentaries that got them together, and they've been on interviews together. Yeah. And
but there wasn't a pre-existing rivalry between them.
Well,
was there?
I mean, I kind of downplayed it, but I think going into the Olympics, really because Zola Budd was unknown, but there was this idea that she was the only one who could beat her.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was definitely a rivalry afterwards for several years because they both continued running and they were both very successful, but neither one of them ever won any Olympics medals, I believe. So
And the thing I remember is kind of what you mentioned, that after that, after everything kind of came out and we heard from both athletes, I think most that I heard in the media were saying, well, it sounds like this was an innocent mistake from Zola Budd, that there really wasn't any intent. You know, it was an accident. But Mary Decker was bitter for a long, long time about that. And I think that's when kind of the media turned against her to a degree, saying, well, look, she, she should really try and move on from this, forgive and reconcile here. But she just wouldn't do it. You know, and you can understand. Like John said, this was her career. This was kind of the pinnacle, or supposed to be the pinnacle, and it just never happened.
And the other interesting thing is they both have kind of similar childhood stories, where just not great parenting situations and stuff like that, overcoming maybe step parents who weren't nice to them and all kinds of things. So there's been a couple documentaries about this, which I have not seen, but I think this story lends itself very well to that because of the, you know, the way they both sort of grew up, and then the different, you know, America's sweetheart versus this up and coming person who shouldn't even be there.
Right.
And then the aftermath.
Yeah. No, I'm going to look for one of those. Well, maybe all of the documentaries. It sounds like an amazing story.
Netflix, I think there's one ESPN did for sort of their Title IX. They did 9 for 9. That's one of them. And then I think some British purveyor recently did one as well.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense as well, since
it was
all about
John.
Completed for Great Britain. Yeah,
that was really good.
Thanks, John via Brian.
There's our rivalry segment for this week.
You had to report on it.
I did.
You did.
Definitely. All right, it's time for a little social media nonsense. Lisa, I think you're pretty fired up about your choices this week.
I have a big chip on my shoulder about a lot of things, apparently. And actually, one just came through moments ago that sort of made me go, huh, yeah, that's kind of what's been bothering me a little bit about some of this. So for me, it's I think social media has changed the Olympics even since 2012 in terms of instant memes. Like before, in the 2012 Olympics, you had the Michaela Maroney face. It's sort of like the undying meme that just like lasted forever and ever. And then in this Olympics, you have the Michael Phelps face.
Yes.
And she was just like, I'm so glad that like I'm not the face anymore. But he was only the face. He was only like the disappointed or grumpy face, or the grumpy cat face, as my husband said, for 5 minutes practically. And then they move on to these other, you know, memes, and everything's just moving so quickly. The thing that has irritated me the most on social media, or the thing that I love about social media, but that irritates me, is that bad behavior by announcers, headline writers, commentators of all stripes is being called out pretty much instantly on social media. So when a newspaper has a headline that says something like Michael Phelps ties for silver in 100 butterfly, and in tiny letters underneath says Ledecky smashes world record for 800 meter swim. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like this is what we're talking about. So that was something interesting that I saw just last night. The thing I saw just now was somebody has the hashtag on Twitter, misogynoir. When Michaela Maroney's disappointment was adorable, but Gabby Douglas's disappointment is attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty interesting contrast, and I'm going to have to think about it a little bit more, but we'll definitely post that in the show notes. But I thought that was interesting. And just one other quick thing that I saw is, did you guys hear about the Cubs DJ that got fired for playing a song? But and I'll post a link to the Reddit thread that talks about it. They have a link to the article in the Chicago Tribune. But somebody says, this is great. Quote, we don't care if you do it. Just don't play any songs about it. And somebody says, right, firing someone for accidentally bringing it to attention and employing a guy that actually did it is hypocritical. I just thought that was interesting, too. So they fired the DJ, but they keep the player.
Yeah.
So anyway, thought that was interesting. So, yeah, I'm a Debbie Downer, but I'm cool with that. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a much longer story that, you know, maybe hopefully we'll get to in a future episode, because we talked about this on air, how Brian and I both have, as big Cubs fans, have very mixed feelings.
Yeah, that was like our last episode. I think we talked about this.
Bringing that player on. Should I go?
Go ahead, John.
All right. Well, I'm going to go a little bit lighter. There's two players on the there's a couple players on the Texas Rangers. They're in first place. They're a baseball team, but their shortstop and their third baseman, Adrian Beltre and Elvis Andrus, are frenemies. Frenemies, is that a good way to put it? Adrian Beltre famously doesn't like it when people touch his head, and Elvis Andrews repeatedly touches his head and it annoys him. And there's all kinds of video, if you look on the internet, of them being very playful and whatever. It's very funny and hilarious stuff. And then I guess the last night I saw on Twitter, after someone hits a game-winning hit or does something, there's a post-game interview, and usually something gets dumped on the head.
Gatorade, water, whatever.
Elvis Andrews tried to do that to Adrian Beltre, and it didn't go well is probably the best way to put it, so look that up. But really what I wanted to get to was... I find this really funny, and probably most people will. But Michael Young was a player for the Texas Rangers for a very long time. Had a great career, so they inducted him into the Texas Rangers Baseball Hall of Fame. They had a ceremony at the on the field. He drove around the field in a little truck, and he was sitting in the back of the truck. I guess relevant to this is apparently Michael Young is famous for absolutely hating clowns. Not just like I'm scared of clowns, but just hating clowns. So as he's driving by the Rangers players, Elvis Andrews jumps out at him, and he's wearing a scary clown mask. And Michael Young, like, seriously gets out into the back of the truck and, like, looks scared and is about to pop him in the face. And it's just the funniest thing I've ever seen. I don't know. So I'll have to find, there's a video of it, and it's amazing. Boy. There's a picture. I just wanted to point out that if you're unfamiliar with Adrian Beltre, Elvis Andrews, fun, that's well worth your time. It's pretty hilarious, but more specifically, this is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. So.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because I was specifically going to mention the Adrian Beltre post-game Gatorade bucket attempt. Is one of my social media items for today, and to finish the story, there were actually two Rangers players that had buckets of Gatorade that were going to try and dump them on Adrian Beltre while he was doing the post game interview. Beltre saw them coming. He went and picked up a big broom from the pitcher's mound and was using the broom to ward off his potential bucket dousers.
Oh my God.
And this
God.
Went on for about 90 seconds. And then it looked like they were giving up. So he resumed his post-game interview with the sideline reporter for the Texas Rangers. And they came back and tried it again. And
someone needs to remake his broom wielding with like a lightsaber.
Yes.
Instead,
that would
awesome.
Fit. It would fit.
That'd be so awesome.
It would. So that's one. My other one, if you're familiar with former Philadelphia Eagles head coach, current Kansas City Chiefs head coach Andy Reid, he is a large man who always has a baseball cap on, glasses, and a big bushy mustache. And there is a picture on Twitter of a baby in an Andy Reid costume, and it is absolutely marvelous.
Yes. Hang on. I'm finding it.
Yes.
Just so I can look at it and giggle once again.
Yes. And the folks at Mike and Mike tweeted it out yesterday simply saying, this is the best costume ever. It is just awesome. Baby dressed up as Andy Reid. And we will post a photo of that to our web notes.
And it totally would not work if it was just glasses or just mustache. You have to have both. I mean, it's critical. And the expression on this baby's face is also the best. So
just
it's,
looking up like, hey, what's up? I'm dressed
my
up
parents
like
put
Reid.
These things on my head and, you know.
What are you going to do?
I can't do anything about it. So anyway, awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, that's no good. Problem. So that's our social media nonsense for this week. And I think that'll wrap things up for today.
All right, is it time? I guess it's time.
It is time.
All right. So thank you.
The closing ceremonies.
It's our closing ceremonies. Maybe we can find that music. Thanks from all three of us for hopping onto the bandwagon this time around. Plenty of room for everybody, including our very special guest today, Travis T-Dog Tate. Thank you, Travis, for coming in, as always. The Bandwagon Podcast is produced by us. That's John Steinbacher over there, Brian Moline over there, and me. I'm Lisa Braltz. Brian records and edits everything, so he's also our technical director, or TD, and I work with our website. John is John.
Hey.
Yeah, so John does John. He does it really well. Scott Cameron is WILL's Director of News and Public Affairs. Jim Kelly designed our logo and also suggested our theme song, which is the song Bandwagon by REM, in case you were wondering. And tireless tech support has been provided by Mike Bowman and Taylor Judd. We are now at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon update. Any past links you might have to old stories, to the new ones found on that page. And from that main page, you can locate each individual episode with its links to the articles we discussed with some show notes and videos, et cetera. What are you guys doing? You're passing notes in class. Cut it out. You can also subscribe to this podcast and rate it, please, in iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Bandwagon Podcast. No vowels in that Twitter handle, just all consonants, to get our most recent thoughts on stuff. And from there, you can Twitter stalk each one of us individually. The next episode of Bandwagon will come your way in a couple of weeks. We're looking forward to it already. Thank you for listening. Over and out.